An Introduction to Group Dynamics by Nidraku. As the Enlightenment began with the premise that man is a rational animal, and the post-Enlightenment began with the premise that man is an irrational animal, so begins the Dark Enlightenment with the premise that man is a social animal. And this beginning, one must hope, heralds the birth of the Merry Enlightenment, the extension of the realm of the movement that booted reflexivity to encompass not only the world, but also itself, drawing into question the premises of not only the enemy Memeplex to be outcompeted, but also the new outcompetitor sprung Dionysus-like from the thigh of the old. This shows the importance of the reference point of Chinese philosophy referenced obliquely by Mencius Moldbug, who then proceeded, in true libertarian fashion, to ignore the question, and explicitly by myself. They began not with the answer of rationality, but note that Douglas Adams continues to be the prophet of our time, with the corresponding question. The fundamental difference between Mencius and Zunzi is that the former held that human nature was good and the latter held that it was bad. Both proceeded accordingly from there, but the philosophical tradition, unlike ours, was at least conscious that the question must be asked. So, man is a social animal. Enlightenment philosophers, believing themselves to be atoms of reason, still functioned according to the social laws of man. National socialism has its roots not only in the masses of the unenlightened, but also in Fichte, the Kantian. But what are these laws? I have referred to a certain subset of them before as group dynamics, the rules governing individual affiliation to the superindividual, to in-groups, and individual disaffiliation with the superindividuals contrary to their own, without groups. But these terms are derivationally clumsy. To derive the necessary terminology from them would result in weighty, awkward polysyllabisms of the sort that would make even an amateur black magician shudder in disgust. And the true wizard notices that group dynamics are embedded in the Germanic languages themselves, as I have previously noted. Language is a clumsy weapon, but in the hands of an expert wielder, it can be made slightly less so. Instead of in-groups and out-groups, certainly instead of tribes, which do not allow us so much as a descriptor for the foreign, we can speak of theeds and eltheds. What is a theed? Definitions of the prerationally grasped can only be imperfect, but to begin, a theed is a superindividual grouping that its constituent individuals feel affiliation with and therefore positive estimates of. What I'm famous for is the experiment where we put some kids in red shirts, others in blue shirts. It doesn't take a lot, but after a few environmental messages, then the blue shirts think they are better than red shirts, and red shirts think they are better than blue shirts, even though they're exactly the same shirt otherwise. Human beings can have a bias. Whatever group I'm in is better than yours. Theeds are defined by their theed identity, their thetishness, and in opposition to elthedishness, but these are not two separate phenomena, but one with multiple facets. Brahmins are intellectual, but intellectual unlike Vaisyas and Dalits. Vaisyas are hardworking, but hardworking unlike Brahmins and Dalits. Dalits are fun-loving, but fun-loving unlike Brahmins and Vaisyas. Theeds are multiple. One does not simply affiliate with one theed, but with an overlapping mishmash of theeds of different and shifting priorities, and some theeds are concentric. A guy from Western Tennessee once said to me that, when he's in a bar at home, he'll get along with the guy from Western Tennessee and fight the guy from Eastern Tennessee. When he's in a bar in Eastern Tennessee, he'll get along with the guy from Tennessee and fight the guy from Georgia. And when he's in a bar in Alabama, he'll get along with the guy from Georgia and fight the guy from Vermont. Theeds can form along multiple lines. One can simultaneously be fetishly from Western Tennessee, and then Tennessee, the South, America, fetishly an analytic philosopher, and then a philosopher, an academic, a Brahmin, fetishly a fan of black metal, and then metal, non-mainstream music, and so on. Theed identity can be reinforced in many ways. Important examples include participating in fetish activities, bashing eltheds and their members, throwing exosemantic gang signs, and attacking the use of elthedish exosemantic gang signs. As I said on Twitter long ago, feminists are often empirically wrong about the meaning and use of slurs, but meaning and use aren't the point of their policing. It's about exosemantic gang signs. You can't be one of us and call people cunts. Perhaps linguistic taboos can be seen in terms of group dynamics in general. Exosemantic gang signs, we can simplify and call them, I'm not sure what. My first inclination is to say tokens and L tokens. I hate overloading existing words, but I've got nothing better, so I'll go with it for now. Does anyone have anything? It looks like all the Germanic roots that could be useful have given existing English words. I could use mantra and L mantra, but that's even worse. I could try to derive something from Delta Epsilon Iota Chi Nu Omega or Sigmeta Mu Alpha Delta Iota, but that might not work. Sem retains the link to semiotics at the heavy cost of openness to unfortunate puns and typos. Semayan is almost as bad and recalls the Russian name S-Y-M-Y-O-N, which USG in its wisdom anglicizes to, well, you know. Latin borrowing patterns would give semium, which sounds like half of a chemical. Code is just bad. Another possibility is auth, which allows for puns on oath and the homophone auth, as in authentication, but looks weird and requires drawing from a language that doesn't borrow well into English. Black magic is hard. What is a token? A token is, obviously, a gang sign, a fetish unit of communication. But what is this? Exosemantic. Exosemantic, the part of a word or statement that isn't its strict entailments, but which are extremely common implicatures specifically. These shouldn't be contextual or Gricean implicatures, but socially bound ones, which have been formed by continued use of the word in particular contexts or by particular speakers. The exosemantics of a word may eventually become incorporated into the defining entailments. There should be a correlate, endosemantic, but this would simply be the lexical entailments of a word, so I don't know that we need a new word for that. It is commonly known that words carry meaning on two levels, denotation or strict, dictionary-level meaning and connotation or emotional association. But there is a third, exosemantic level. The word eldritch, for example, denotes otherworldliness and connotes a feeling of cosmic horror toward its referent, but it also exosemantically implies that its user has read Lovecraft. The word liberty is no different from the word freedom. The word praxis is no different from a certain definition of the word practice, except in its exosemantic layer. Praxis is heavy. Praxis implies familiarity with, association with, the academic tradition that uses the word praxis. Heavy, heavy, and dense. Volume the phonetic, syntactic, and morphological space that a word occupies. A very long word is one with a lot of syllables. A very tall word is one with a lot of morphemes. Mass the semantic, pragmatic, and social impact of a word. A very heavy word has not only a lot of specific entailments, but may also have a lot of socially linked implicatures that are strongly bound to the word itself or to its use in certain contexts. Density equals mass slash volume. A very dense word is one with a low volume and a heavy mass. A very non-dense word is one with a high volume but very little mass. Heavy words are likely tokens, and repeating tokens reinforces theed identity. Some tokens are identifiers, markers of identity that one can apply to oneself. Identifying oneself with these tokens also reinforces theed identity. Tumblr about mess are the theed identification equivalent of heroin. Stating the fetish position on a certain issue also reinforces theed identity and is indistinguishable to at least the untrained from rational thought. It should be obvious from this that politics is the mind killer. Political ideologies are fetish identifiers. Political positions are tokens. Political debate is theed conflict and reinforcement. To even answer the question, what are you politically, is to reinforce a previously determined fetish identity, hence anarcho-fascism. Update 7/11/13, but of course some idiots had to go off and use that and mean it, so I can't use it anymore.